We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From the Global Pod World headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. Adam, what day is it?
Thursday.
Hold on. Nope. It's Friday.
It's Friday, Friday. Gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the
So excited to be here with you. Tar Heels, no action this weekend. Adam, I don't know what to do. I'm a little lost.
What are you going to do with your free time this weekend?
I really don't know. Somebody asked me that in an interview I was doing this week about the Tar Heels. We were talking about the Tar Heels. And then the last question was like, oh, what are you going to do this weekend? I was like, I don't know. Probably go back and listen to all the pods.
Yeah, that'd be like download them each 1,000
yeah,
more times.
Yeah, and then just delete it and download it again and delete it and download it again.
And then rate it and be like, that was 5 stars. Yeah. I got to tell you, it was good work.
These guys sound handsome, too, while we're at it.
Well, and no playoff football this weekend, which would have been a nice little interlude. Yeah. So I'm not really sure what's going to happen. To be honest, if we had had our act together, it would have been a good weekend for a Roadhouse Challenge.
Yeah, things have just been so fast and furious here over the last few days. We should have done a Roadhouse Challenge for this show. But I think what we can do, what if we set up the Roadhouse Challenge and we'll put out the challengers and then people can vote maybe and then we'll pick it on Tuesday and do it next week.
Well, and that way we'll have it ready to go at a moment's notice.
Yeah. So we'll go ahead and round the Roadhouse Challenge into shape here, and it'll be ready early next week for voting. Then we'll rock and roll on that for next week.
When you have to herd all the contenders into the corral, it takes a while.
Come over here, Bloodsport.
Tremors, get over here.
Come on, Top Gun, over here. Stop talking to that random person in the back. So what are we going to do today? Well, a couple different things. We have couple of emails that have been sitting there that we want to get to. There's a story time in there that we're gonna wrap our arms around and nuzzle up with. And then more importantly than that, Adam, we have an interview that we've been excited to get, as we're gonna talk to Nasir Little today. Are you fired up about it?
What a timely appearance for Nasir on the pod.
Yep, coming off his best performance as a Tar Heel.
Well, what I really meant was he's on at a time when I now can remember his name.
I did think this was funny, Adam. I forgot to say this during the pod after dark. So, of course, after every game, we have the Warner Ladder, every Tar Heel win.
Sure.
You can head to Twitter, vote for the winner, ladder player of the game.
I always do.
Yeah. So for this one, I only gave you two choices, and it was Coby White and Nasir Little. Well, a lot of people wanted both. So somebody responded with, clearly the answer is Nasir White.
Makes sense to me. We can't go back down this road because we know it'll happen. It'll get in my head, and I'll struggle for the rest of January and February.
Yeah. Adam, so what I thought we would do is, well, first of all, do you have a list? Do you have anything in particular that you want to talk about?
Or did I arrive with absolutely nothing?
Yeah, that's okay.
That's what you're asking. I have a list.
Oh, okay. So let's do this. Why don't we do your list?
Okay.
Then we'll get to the Nasir Little interview. And then I've got a couple other things that I want to tackle as well after that. But let's start with your list.
Okay.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
The list is complete with a few news items, a few questions, a few comments.
Yeah.
You know, like a list.
Sure.
First of all, Luke May's jersey retired this week in Huntersville at Huff High School.
I did not know that.
On Tuesday night, Luke was there.
Nice.
And so what a great honor for him. Of course, he is very proud of being from Huntersville. And kind of unique, Mark May, his father's jersey, is retired at Charlotte Independence.
Hmm.
And so now Luke May's jersey is retired at Hunter Huff. And the Tar Heels already, I'm sure, recruiting Luke May's future children for like the class of 2042 or somewhere. But great honor for Luke, and nice that they were able to fit it in at a time when the Tar Heels weren't playing. Another piece of Tar Heel news, Mitch Trubisky's going to be in the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, that's good to see.
Two Tar Heels in the Pro Bowl for the first time since 2012.
Yeah, Eric Ebron, the other.
Is that this weekend, the Pro Bowl?
Yes, this weekend.
So I guess we could watch the Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
The Pro Bowl is the worst.
I remember when I was little, I used to think I would watch all the All-Star games. I would love the NBA All-Star game, the Major League All-Star game. Now, I guess baseball is all that one's all right, but it's just because there's nothing else going on.
Right.
Football and basketball. Basketball, I can stand it for a little bit just because they're really good and they do crazy things. The football Pro Bowl has never been good, and it's even worse. Because, I mean, and who can blame these guys? They're not going to go out there and slam into each other for an extra game that they don't have to. Why would you?
Yeah, you're putting millions of dollars on the line.
Yeah, don't do that.
They've already gotten their trip to Hawaii. What else do you want them to do?
No, it's not in Hawaii anymore.
What?
It's in Orlando.
What?
Yeah. It's in Orlando.
Why?
I don't know. I guess the NFL couldn't foot that bill anymore. Yeah, it's in Orlando. Yeah.
Oh, that's even worse.
Yeah. They need to just not have it. They need to think of something else they could do.
Why can't they have, and I think they do, but it doesn't get as much attention. Why don't they have like a skills thing like the NBA does?
Yeah, I don't know.
On the night before.
It'd be better.
And I mean, I think they do, but you need to promote it better. I need to know more about it. I need to know what side of the country it's located on.
Orlando.
All these things are important for me to know.
Who doesn't love Orlando, Adam? I visit there multiple times a year.
Yeah, you're probably going next week for all I know. What about NBA All-Star Game? Do you prefer the Saturday night stuff or the game?
Oh, the Saturday night stuff is the best.
Yeah, I mean, agree with that.
And I do think, I mean, now the three-point contest, I think it's almost more exciting than the dunk contest because there's so many really good three-point shooters, and a lot of times those guys will do it.
Yeah.
And so that's always – I mean, that's better.
The Raptors are pushing Danny Green for the three-point
contest.
They should.
That's in Charlotte this year.
Yeah, it is.
I didn't know that until the other day.
Yeah. It's not in Hawaii.
No.
We should go
Danny Green should do that.
You know, the Saturday night stuff is on the same day that the Tar Heels play at Wake Forest. So we're already halfway there. Living on a prayer to get some tickets.
Yeah.
Help us out. Who owns the Hornets?
Hmm.
Yeah, but I do think I'd rather go. The dunk contest used to be like absolute appointment viewing.
I think the dunk contest went down when when the Barry brother won it that time. Remember when he won it and it was like, and then it just went away forever.
Well, and as you said, none of the, like, think of everyone you want to be in the dunk contest.
None of them do it, yeah.
They will not be in it.
Yeah.
Now think of, like, the third tier of people you want to be in it. Probably you'll see them.
I did appreciate it, like, when Vince Carter at least did it the one time.
Yeah.
Dwight Howard did it the one time. And it's like, that was good.
Yeah.
Vince Carter. I would go Vince Carter over anybody else in the dunk contest.
Right now?
No. Just all time.
In life, like ever?
All time.
Vince Carter over Michael Jordan.
Yes, I'd go Vince Carter in the dunk contest over Michael Jordan.
Whoa. I'm not sure about that one.
I'm just telling you. In the dunk contest. I'm not saying, like, as a basketball player.
For sure, I understand. Well, I think Vince Carter for, like, game dunker, yes. But I think if you're going to have a contest and you're going to say, Michael Jordan, Vince Carter's going to try to beat you in this,
I think
he would figure out a way. Michael Jordan in Michael Jordan's dunking prime, people forget.
Dude, Adam, he dunked and hung in there with the inside part of his elbow.
I got to tell you, I never loved that dunk as much as everyone else.
I did.
I mean, it was no Kenny Smith bouncing the ball backwards between his legs. That seems so risky to me. Like, now, full disclosure, I've not dunked.
If you want to win the dunk contest, look, dunk contest veterans like myself know that you have to take some risks, Adam.
I mean, if you can't.
I'm all in. Vince Carter, definitely. All time you go, Jones, you got one guy to win the dunk contest. I'm going Vince Carter.
I would go Michael Jordan just for the sheer competitive angle. I don't think he would let Vince Carter beat him.
We'll never know.
Dominique Wilkins thought he was going to beat him in 1988 at the Chicago Stadium. No.
Dominique Wilkins did the same dunk every time.
He really did.
It's like, it's a windmill dunk.
It was
impressive.
It
don't
was awesome.
Wrong. But it's like, okay.
Yeah, we get it.
We know you're good at that dunk.
I demand creativity.
Yeah.
Remember when the dunk contest was having, like, its really bad lull?
Yeah.
And they would try to get excited about it and, like, hold up a 10 for, like, a two-handed dunk off
Dr.
one foot.
Yeah, Dr. J be like, okay, fine. Just end this, Nate Robinson. I don't want to see you attempting to dunk for 7 straight minutes.
All right, well, so we're going to the dunk contest. That'll be good. And Danny Green's going to win the three-point contest.
Hey.
He made 7 threes in one quarter the other night.
We spoke Army-Navy into existence. We can speak the All-Star game into existence.
Yeah, that's right. 7 threes in one quarter.
Can't wait to see it live, Danny.
Would you take Danny Green over every other three-point competitor?
What if Danny Green won the three-point contest and you and I got to be sitting not just in the arena,
right.
We're sidelined and get to roll down on each other, like be like, oh, when somebody does something crazy.
And hold up like the signs with the scores even though he's just shooting, like hold up the three.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'd be down there with like all our friends in the league. Yeah.
Kevin Garnett, for some reason, probably would still be there.
Well, Marvin Williams would be there. Yeah. He'd want us to sit with him, probably.
This is all coming together.
Did you see, speaking of Tar Heels in the NBA, Raymond Felton, P.S., still in the NBA with the Thunder. They went back to play the Knicks at the Garden.
Mm.
And, like, all the Knicks fans started chanting, "We want Raymond." And then I think it was, like, Paul George or somebody on the Thunder bench started, like, clapping along with him.
Nice.
And Raymond thought it was hilarious. But the Thunder did not put him in.
Come on, Thunder.
Losers.
Whatever, Billy Donovan.
Raymond Felton needs to be on the pod.
Head coach of the Thunder.
That was impressive that you could come up with that. Okay. Let's see. Oh, here's a question that's on the list.
Mm.
Pam, certain to butcher it, Monninghoff.
Yeah.
She's coming to town the week of the state game, so not next week, but the next week.
Okay.
And she wants to go to Roy Williams Live, and she wants to know how she can make that happen.
I would... Well, first of all, you're welcome. I mean, anyone is welcome to come to Top of the Hill. If you've never been there, period, or never been there for a show, there's kind of two different seating areas. We are located in the main inner dining area of Top of the Hill. A lot of those tables are reserved kind of for the whole year. And so people reserve them for all the shows, and they fill them every show, and it's great, and we appreciate those folks. There are a handful of tables that are kind of can be reserved week to week. I will say this year we have had really big crowds every single week. And I mean, I can't guarantee that every single table has been filled every single week, but it has been very full all season long. So my suggestion is to call Top of the Hill and tell them Pam, what you're planning on doing, and you'd like to come on this certain date, and do they have tables available for that certain date? Tell them how many seats you need, all that stuff. Now, if it's – they may also – there may be like an eight top, and if you only have two, you may end up sitting with some other folks that you may not know, but that's okay. They're all Tar Heel fans, and it's great. Now, there's also just kind of the bar area, which is in the same portion of the building and of the restaurant, but you're a little farther away. You can still hear what's going on, and that's, of course, just open seating. You can come roll in and do whatever you want. So there are a couple different options, but if you're planning on eating, if you're planning, if you want a better seat, kind of really be able to hear really well what Coach is saying, then I would suggest calling ahead and seeing if they have tables available. And I would think if you call a couple weeks ahead, unless you have like a party of 20, that you're likely going to be able to get a seat in there if you do it far enough in advance.
I feel like when I retire here in a year or two,
yeah,
I think I would like to come to the coaches show every week.
Thanks for supporting me, Adam, supporting the coaches and supporting the Tar Heels.
Well, I will. I just don't right now.
Right, yeah.
I mean, because I think, like, you get good insight, I think. That's when you get much better insight from that than you do from a Roy Williams press conference.
Sure.
And you also get to go to the top of the hill, and there's like a regular core of people there, mm-hmm. so it's like its own little radio show family.
Yeah.
I'd like to be in the family.
We, Hubert Davis filled in this week because Coach was on the road, and Hubert Davis is really good. He's just
– at everything.
Yeah. I mean, he's just a really good person, first of all, but he is so good, and you should have received Roy Williams Live like you normally do as a podcast if you subscribe to the Carolina Insider feed. And if you haven't listened to it, I would encourage you to do it just because Hubert's really good. But just a couple of the things, let me just cherry pick a couple things here, Adam. He talked about, and I've heard him say this before, but I kind of forgot him. He talked about how he'd been in speech therapy when he was younger and, you know, had battled a little bit of a, not a lisp or anything, but just kind of a pronunciation issue.
I've got that.
Yeah, me too. But now you have a book to clean all that up for you. And how he used to be so afraid to speak in front of groups, and now he's – I mean, if you ask me, Jones, who are the three best public speakers you know, Hubert Davis would be on that list. And so he talked about that. He talked about playing the cello growing up and how he didn't want to, but his mom really wanted him to because of something that she had done, and he had, you know, was all into athletics, which was what his dad wanted him to do. And so he talked about that some. But then – also, in talking about the basketball side of things, really had good comments about Nasir Little, about Brandon Robinson, about Andrew Playtech, just some individual players that we got questions about. He really spoke eloquently about coaching and what it means to him and coaching the JV group, and it was just really good. So I hope if you haven't, if you only sometimes listen to that Roy Williams Live or you normally just delete it, I would encourage you to listen to it always. But this in particular is an interesting one just because it's a little different feel because it was Hubert who was on there.
We haven't had Hubert on the pod on a while.
Yeah, we need to get him on this offseason, I think.
Yeah.
He was on, gosh, a couple years ago at this point. So, yeah, he is a great interview and just a great person.
All the assistant coaches who I think of as having just been on were actually on two seasons ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago. Yeah, we need to probably refresh all our interviews with them. And I will say a lot of Jay Billis talk with Hubert too, because I guess Jay Billis on the broadcast on Monday said that Hubert was the best dad that he had ever known. And so we asked that question to Hubert, and Hubert had his son Micah there with him sitting next to him. So just good stuff.
Well, and ESPN had just, like, put back out that SportsCenter or College Game Day commercial where Jay Billis and Digger Phelps and Hubert Davis are sitting in the cafeteria, and people keep, like, bumping Jay Billis on the head or, like, backing into his seat. And he's like, what's wrong with these people? And then the camera pans up, and it turns out they're sitting at Carolina. And Hubert Davis, with impeccable timing and wit, as he always does, goes, I don't know, Duke boy. I had forgotten about the whole Duke boy thing.
Yeah.
Good times. Also, Jay Billis had hair in that commercial.
Mm.
A couple of updates. Rebecca Furlong.
I thought you said Rebecca Black.
No, we've already heard from her. We heard from Rebecca Furlong on the pod after dark when we referenced that it appeared to me that a young lady had her two children get Leaky Black's autograph before the game, and then she told Leaky that she was on the Leaky train. Mm. It was Rebecca Furlong. A big-time pod listener. And So, of course, Leakey signed all the autographs.
Of course.
Probably personalized them and then, like, gave everybody a hug.
Did you happen to listen to the pod after dark?
Yeah.
I mean, because I don't listen to the podcasts after they – I mean, I get
well,
them.
That's because you have to do the thing.
Did you like the sultry Leakey train whistle yes. during the pod after dark part?
Well, and that reminds me that Rhett Edwards thinks the Leakey train theme song should be Come On, Ride That Train by the Quad City DJs.
Also a good one.
I was impressed that he could immediately come up with Quad City DJs. That was good.
Yeah, who couldn't?
Or maybe he used Google. I'm not sure. But either way, Come On, Ride That Train is a great song for the Leakey Train, and I think they should play that at the Smith Center like every time he goes to the free throw line. And then the – oh, no, two more things. One, Mike Silver sent us a cool video of how his wife painted their yeah. baby boy's room like
that
with a
good.
Really cool Argyle yeah. stripe.
That looked like the official Tar Heel yeah, Argyle. That was impressive.
That was good work. And I first thought it was like – I don't know, like a wallpaper border or something?
Was it not?
No, I think she had painted it.
I thought it was wallpaper that she had. Man, if she painted that, that is big time.
Either way, it looks awesome.
Yeah, it looks good.
That's one lucky baby boy.
Yeah.
And then last thing, Coach Carter, I don't know, I guess his given first name is Coach. That's what it says on his birth certificate, was looking at the arms cross photo from Monday night with Yash, mm-hmm. and he has decided that you would be a great superhero
yeah,
due
sounds,
to your pose.
That sounds correct.
And I would be the villain.
Yeah, that sounds 100% correct. I got some compliments on my serious face there. I thought I did better.
Yeah, you did. A couple people said you were making improvements.
Yeah,
that's all you can do, Jones. Get a little better every time you get
yeah,
out there.
That's my goal.
Yeah.
Okay, a couple different things. Well, I tell you what. Why don't we get to our Nasir Little interview? That's okay. what I said we were going to do, so let's do that. We'll get to our Nasir Little interview. And then coming out of that, I've got a couple things, including a deep dive into our email inbox where I want to tackle a couple of emails. But Nasir Little, been a lot of interest in Nasir, and we're excited to have a chance to talk to him. Let's get to our conversation with the Tar Heel freshman.
Well, by popular demand, after he has pretty much crushed it on the radio every time this year that he has been on with us in postgame, we felt like we needed to have Nasir Little on the podcast, and he was nice enough to give us a few minutes today. Nasir, it's been a pretty good week or two for you. What have these last 7 to 10 days been like for you?
Everything's been going pretty well. God's been taking each day, you know, one day at a time, one step at a time, just focusing on getting better each and every day and trying to steadily improve.
Is that hard to do, to kind of keep that consistent approach when I know you want it all to come really quickly and everybody wants it to come really quickly? Is it hard to kind of stay the course a little bit and just kind of keep doing things on a consistent basis?
Not at all. I think that's what the misconception is. You know, I don't want things to come quickly. I mean, you know, if they do, they do. But, you know, I'm really a guy that trusts the process, and I know that and I understand that and I embrace that. Now, I think on the outside, for a lot of people looking in, you know, that's what they expect. But, you know, I know myself and I know my work ethic, and I know that, you know, as long as I stay faithful and just keep working, you know, things are going to turn out okay.
You said the other day after the Virginia Tech game that you felt like one thing that had helped some was paying less attention to all the social media stuff and the media things. What were you hearing from that you've now tuned out, and how has that helped?
Just, you know, a lot of comparisons. You know, the freshmen over there, you know, they're really great players. And they're, you know, they're having a great season. They're coming out really hot. But, you know, I think my situation is a little bit different. I have, you know, vets that are returning who are playing extremely well. And, you know, a coach who trusts the guys who have experience. And I know that I have things to learn and things to get better at. So, you know, I think that they see other guys, you know, coming off to a fast start, and they expect everybody to know, kind of excel at that pace, but I think everybody's journey is kind of different. And I tuned that out. You know, I wasn't really trying to, you know, meet anybody else's standards. I just knew what I had to do and just try to get better every day.
Now, Nas, obviously, I know it's going to surprise you when I say this, you're a lot younger than Adam and I are. So we don't have to deal with this as much as, or did not have to deal with this kind of growing up as much as you have. But with social media being such a big part of everybody's life, and you hear it all the time, and being as well-known as you are, I understand that people feel like they can just talk to you and talk at you. Do you ever just get that urge just to be like, man, shut up. I mean, just to go back at him, but you got to go, hey, you know what? Let me pump the brakes here.
Yeah, most definitely. Because the problem is people take it outside of the sports. You know, they start coming at you personally and then start talking about you as a person, not just a basketball player at that point. It's insulting. I don't think, nobody deserves that, especially when you're playing a sport that's, that you play for fun, that you love, and then it's people that have probably never touched a basketball in their life, never played at a high level before, and they just feel like they have the right to come at you and assault you as a person. And we're human beings at the end of the day. I don't think you should treat other people like that.
Now, Adam and I don't know anything. We're ballers. You understand that, right?
Why'd they look at me?
I was like,
believe him. I'm
yeah,
not sure
I was like, okay. Highly be skeptical. I mean, I don't know.
So, I think at whatever age I might be, slightly older than you, I think doing what you just said would be difficult for me. Like, sometimes people tweet at me and be like, that article really sucked.
Sure.
That does happen from time to time.
Yeah.
Or like, you screwed up these words. Don't you know a noun and a verb or something like that?
Sure.
It's hard for me not to go back at them and go, well, what have you written? How do you at 8, you haven't even turned 19 yet. You're 18.
Yeah.
How do you at 18 have the maturity not to just click that button that's right there in front of you and go right back at them?
I mean, it's kind of, I kind of been in the spotlight for a couple of years, few years now. And one thing, I kind of always taught myself was like, at the same time as all the negative stuff I'm getting, I think I'm getting even more positive stuff. And I think, in society, just how the world works, we focus on the bad so much. You can have a great game, score 30 points. If you miss a layup, you're probably going to focus on, dang, I missed a layup, but you made like 10. So, the way I live my life is just, I could get 1,000 good comments and 1 bad comment, but that bad is going to hurt me more than the 1,000 comments make me feel good. And I kind of wanted to change that perception of that and just make it more of, don't get too high or too low, but acknowledge that a lot of people do support me, even more than the people that, don't want to see me be successful or, kind of excited when I'm going through a tough time, people that want to see that. There's people that support me through that and just kind of appreciate that more than the bad stuff.
Tell us a little bit about your background, about growing up, and just kind of how you got to this point.
I started playing basketball. I think I played like my first YMCA league when I was about 7 or 8. We played in a little 6-foot YMCA hoops. And, I was dunking. And that's not something common.
Wait, so. You were dunking at like 7 years old?
Yeah, on the
on the 6-foot hoop.
On the 6-foot hoop.
Well, that's still impressive.
I couldn't do it today on a 6-foot hoop,
because the relativity to the height is I was probably like 4'6" or 4'7" at the time, so it was like me to come down there dunking, and so that's when the whole "where's his birth certificate" thing started. And then, I'm a military family, so we moved around. We had moved to England, and they don't really play basketball like that over there, so I had to play up, and I was like about 10 playing with like 13-year-olds, so I was smaller. That's where I think I kind of got like some of my ball skills from, like a little bit more touch and able to do different types of things with the ball. Moved back to Florida, my 5th grade year. I didn't really play basketball like that. And then I moved to Jacksonville. And then my mom just kind of put me in this, like, basketball camp. Before that, I didn't really know how to shoot. So, I just was watching YouTube videos. And I was asking my dad to teach me what he knew about it. And I would literally, ride my bike to the gym at, like, 9 in the morning and then stay there until 9 at night every day of the summer. I'm just trying to get better and better. And then my mom put me, like, this little – so high school camp, like the little summer camp things. And, I just played in that. I did pretty good. And then I just wanted to get better, man. I've been a perfectionist my whole life. So everything I do, I want to be as good as I can. And then going into 7th grade year, I was about 5'10". And, I was just playing one day and I got my first pair of like actual basketball shoes. And I just felt athletic, so I just tried to dunk. and I got hung. But the fact that I got hung was like, okay, I'm there. So then I went home. I did like 500 calf raises. I was just I was like, I'm a dunk. And then the next day I went to the gym, and then I dunked, right? And I was by myself. And then my best friend Tommy, you know, RIP, but best friend Tommy, he comes in the gym. And I was like, Tommy, I can dunk, bro. I can dunk. He's like, bro, you lying? Let me see. I was like, all right, got you. And he got the phone out. And then I just like dribbled up the court all the way full court, did a rim grazer. And then, you know, ever since then, I started just, ever since then, that's when I started dunking. I haven't done a fast break layup since that moment. And then, you know, I played in middle school, then going in high school, went to Oakleaf High School my freshman and sophomore year. I played pretty well, started as a freshman, did well, and then I started to get better. You know, I just felt like there was a different type of level that I could take it to. I just needed the kind of right kind of guidance and right kind of work to get to where I could go. So I moved to Orlando in order to be able to work out with my trainer, Daryl Harden. Mm-hmm. And that's when my life kind of just changed completely. You know, we were up every morning 5 a.m. On the court. I would work out 5 a.m. to 6 a.m., then go. Right after that, go lift weights. Then right after that, go to school, have practice. Then go work out after school, then go do homework. So, like, I just had the same work ethic throughout the last couple years of high school that just kind of transformed my life. And, you know, that I think those kind of workouts is why I'm at North Carolina today. I don't think I'd be here without that.
That's a big boom for calf raises right there, by the way. Nasir goes, couldn't quite dunk, does the calf raises, he's dunking the next day. That's how it all works.
I mean, it's a factor. I was at the gym 10 hours before I tried to dunk. I wasn't thinking about that.
How do you think the fact that you've got some military influence in your family, how do you think that impacted the Nas that we see today?
I don't think it impacts me as much as people think. It's just kind of like, you know, people think when you're in a military family, like, you got these strict parents that be like, and some people are like that, but my parents weren't really like that, like, where it was like every morning bed had to be neat and all that type of stuff. I mean, to a degree, you know, they made sure I was, you know, tidied up and stuff like that, but, you know, they weren't super strict people, and it was always me. You know, they wanted me to want something, you know, then that, I think that's what made it more special. That's what made me who I am, not being forced to do anything, just making sure that it was what I valued. Now, I remember a pivotal point in my life was seventh grade year. You know, I wasn't doing well in school, and, you know, they didn't say anything to me about it, but I just came to them one day. I was like, I'm not going to get a C ever again in my life. And then since that point, I was getting all A's, you know, and that just kind of said, you know, who type of person I was and the type of work ethic I had, and, you know, my personal determination.
Had a chance to talk to Hubert Davis last night on Coach's radio show. Coach was out, and so Hubert filled in for him. And he talked really positively about you and about his relationship with you and how proud he was of you and kind of the growth that you've shown this year. I'd just be interested from your perspective, kind of your relationship with Coach Davis and how he's helped you.
Oh, yeah. Coach Davis, you know, he thinks the world of me, man. I think sometimes he thinks I'm better than what I think I am myself. You know, that's great coming from a coach. You know, me, like, I'm a worker. So, you know, he's a worker as well. And we know we both really love basketball. And I think, you know, we have a really good connection over that. I think what he appreciates is my desire to get better regardless of the circumstance. You know, if I'm playing well, I'm still in the gym. If I'm not playing well, I'm in the gym. And I think he appreciates that. And, you know, he kind of sees some of that in himself as he was in college. And I think that's why he's so willing to work with me and help me get to where I want to be.
The last three games, obviously, there's been a difference in the output as far as what you've been able to do on a consistent level. Does it feel any different to you? I mean, is anything different happening while you're out there, or is it just the success level's been a little higher?
I mean, I think, you know, things are starting to slow down a little bit. I think I'm just letting the game come to me more. I don't think I'm trying to ever since I blocked out all that, you know, social media talk, I think I've been able to just kind of focus on what's in front of me and, you know, not try to be so focused on trying to please other people, just kind of just try to help the team the best way I can, just take what they give me. You know, if it's not there, it's not there, but if it is, it is. And, you know, each game I've just been trying to, you know, take a step at a time, let my confidence, you know, get back to where it was and, you know, just keep producing, help the team win.
I want to ask you about a couple things your teammates said about you. Ryan McAdoo threw you under the bus the other day and said you play as much Fortnite as he does. Right. Is that accurate? How much Fortnite do you play?
That's not accurate. Ryan definitely plays a lot more than me. I do play, especially over winter break. I did play a lot because there's really nothing to do. But, you know, lately I haven't really been able to play like that. I've been, you know, focused on school and basketball. But, you know, Ryan definitely does play way more than me.
Okay. When we had Leaky on, he had never heard of Han Solo. Have you ever heard of Han Solo?
Han Solo. Yeah, I've heard of him. I don't even know what he is. What is that, musician or something?
Have you heard of Star Wars? Like the
yeah,
movie?
Star
okay.
Wars.
Leaky had never even heard of the movie Star Wars.
That's impossible.
Yeah, that's what I think, too.
Told him.
Like, I mean, I'm not like a huge Star Wars fan, but you at least would have heard of it, right?
That's impossible, yeah. I don't even understand how that's possible. He knows what Star Wars is.
Well, then he was lying.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, and now this. So I was watching a tape of one of the recent games, and they put up, like, your fun fact or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it said that I think, like, the only food you claim to know how to make was a certain kind of noodles.
Oh, ramen noodles.
Yeah, ramen noodles.
So you pronounce it ramen.
Adam yeah. says ramen noodles. Have you ever heard anybody else in their life say ramen noodles?
I have heard people say ramen noodles.
That's what I'm talking about.
You're not alone there.
Yeah.
That's good to hear.
Yes, I've heard that.
Okay. Well, Nas and I are team ramen, though, so we're on there.
Yeah, ramen.
Okay. I feel a little better.
Your dad seems very active just in your life. I mean, I've seen him some online, and just what is your relationship like sure. with your dad, and what's he mean to you?
Yeah, me and my dad are super close. You know, he means a lot to me. And I think, you know, mainly comes that because it's not a relationship based on basketball. Mm. You know, it's just a father and a son. And I think that's what makes it, you know, the most organic type of relationship, that regardless of how I'm playing or regardless of all that type of stuff, I know he's going to love me unconditionally. And, you know, I appreciate that. And especially, you know, in a world where, you know, so a lot of people don't have father figures, you know, that makes me even more appreciative of that.
Do you find it hard sometimes to be able to judge those, and I'm not with your dad, obviously, but judge relationships with other people of, hey, this person might just like me because they know that I'm good at basketball and hope to play at a high level one day?
Yeah, for sure. And that's the struggle. You know, not just that, like, you know, people see me around and they might think I'm like being, you know, people use this term Hollywood. Where, like, you feel like you're above everybody and you feel like you're better than everybody, so you don't want to talk to nobody or things like that. But, you know, you just got to be careful who you mess with. You don't know anybody's intentions, you know. Even with, you know, females, you don't know if they like you because they sure. like you, or if they like you because they see dollar signs. Like, it's hard. So you got to really be careful who you trust. And especially with people nowadays, they could be friendly. But, you know, I look at everybody, I feel like, you're just trying to be friendly because, you know, you feel like you can gain something off of me. And it makes it hard to build, like, genuine friendships with people and genuine relationships.
Who are a couple of your friendships and genuine ones that you value?
Friendship-wise, I mean, I don't really have much friends. Like, I either consider you like a family or not, really. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, the entire basketball team, I consider them like my family. I don't really consider them like a friend, you know, so... You know, that's the kind of relationship I have with all of them. And then guys like Daryl Harden, you know, Leland Loper, guys like that have been pivotal in my life. I consider them like my brothers too, like, you know, and like secondary father figures, like things like that. I don't really just consider them a friend. So, yeah.
What benefit do you think there is, not just basketball-wise, but some of the stuff you're talking about now, that you've got Kobe and Leaky who are kind of going through the same thing that you are?
Yeah, you know, especially us living together, it makes the people that you can talk to because they relate to you on a more, you know, serious type of level. You know, Kenny and Luke and Cam, you know, they're great leaders, but, you know, they've been playing longer. They're not necessarily going through the same kind of transitions that I'm going through. But Leaky and Kobe, they're going through the same things I'm going through every day in regards to, like, you know, how to try to balance school and basketball. Like, we don't, you know, we're all relatively new to that. And, you know, we all struggle with it at times. So, you know, just being able to kind of, you know, just knock on one of their doors and just talk to them about it really helps out.
What's your relationship like with Coach Williams? Why was Coach Williams somebody that you wanted to continue your basketball career with when you were making your decision?
Because, like I said, you know, I don't want anything to be promised to me. Like, I don't want anything to be just said, you're going to get this when you get here. You know, because I feel like when people give you things, like, it can be taken away. But when you earn something, you know, it's yours to keep. You know, that's something I value. That's how I live my life. And, you know, he told me straight up, you know, even before I committed, like, you know, I'm not going to promise you minutes. I'm not going to promise you anything. So, you know, you get here, you're going to have to work. And, you know, the reason why I value that is because, you know, if I was in a situation where they're recruiting kids, I wouldn't want them to promise kids my spot neither. Like,
sure.
I would want that kid to have to outwork me for my spot or outperform me for my spot. And, you know, I think that that goes to show that, you know, if he's going to be fair to those before me, then he'll be fair to me when I get here.
We appreciate Nasir's time. Always a thoughtful interview, Adam. I mean, I've been impressed any time I have heard him, which has mostly been with you on the radio network when you've talked to him after games. But just someone who seems very mature to me in Nasir Little, and someone who I think kind of in a weird way, it's such a benefit for him to be mature this early because he's having to deal with a lot of extra stuff that most 18-year-olds don't have to deal with.
And I think he's done a better job of handling it than most 18-year-olds or 28-year-olds or 38-year-olds would do. And certainly seems to be paying dividends on the court now as well.
Hubert Davis told a good story during the radio show about this picture he sent to Nasir about – he just texted it to him or whatever – of it was a racehorse with blinders on, and talked about how Nasir needs to be like, they don't worry about the noise, the other horses, the track conditions. You're just looking for the finish line, Adam. How can you most effectively get there?
Hubert Davis is so wise.
Okay, now, a couple different things. Rick Steinbacher mentioned this when he was on with us a couple of shows ago about the football signing day celebration. And it was officially announced earlier this week. And so it is open to Carolina season ticket holders and football letter winners coming up in the Blue Zone Concourse Club on Wednesday, February 6th at 6 o'clock. It's $25 to go with heavy hors d'oeuvres and a wide range of beverages, according to the release. So, hope you can go check it out. The information's on GoHeels.com. Again, you got to be a season ticket holder or a football letter winner. And I've seen some people a little upset that you have to be a season ticket holder, Adam, to go to this event. There has been a time where I think when Coach Fedora started it, it was open to anybody who wanted to come. There was a charge, but anybody who wanted to come. And now they have limited it to season ticket holders. So I can understand that if you enjoyed going in the past, that you want to keep going, but also I can understand that Carolina wants to make it another incentive to buy season tickets. So I can understand both views on that one.
Yeah, me too, but I think if you enjoy the signing day event, you'd probably enjoy six or seven Saturdays in Keenan Stadium.
Right. So again, go to GoHeels.com if you would like some more information on that, and man, get some tickets.
Good home schedule.
Good home schedule. Should be an exciting year. Buy some tickets. Come join us in Keenan Stadium next year. Looking forward to it. Okay, a couple emails that I wanted to address, Adam. One came from Jeff Mullins. Jeff said this, Jones, you know that I love you. Oh, okay, Jeff, thank you. And you too, Adam.
Oh. So yeah, please, you also, Adam, whatever.
Whatever. So please forgive me for enjoying a laugh at your expense. During the Reese Jewelers pregame show, proud partner of the Tar Heels, on Monday night, I, that's Jones, not Jeff, accidentally said Carrie Bradshaw instead of Carrie Blackshear in talking about the Virginia Tech big man. He said, I immediately tapped rewind on my TuneIn app to make sure my ears deceived me, or to see if my ears deceived me. Did I hear Jones make a Sex and the City reference? Okay, he said, when I played it for my wife, she said, oh, he must have seen the news about Sarah Jessica Parker and Sex in the City. Okay. And now, hey, and I'm going to tell you, if I'd ever seen Sex in the City, you know I would tell you. I told you about the Hallmark movies.
Right.
I would tell you if I had seen Sex in the City. I've never seen Sex in the City in my life.
No, I haven't either.
I mean, I know what it is.
Right.
But I have never seen an episode in my entire life. Jeff continues, to be clear, I am not judging you for being a fan of the iconic television show, nor am I laughing at you for making a mistake.
He said he does a lot of voiceover work, and he would be happy to send us some outtakes, although most of them include R-rated language. He said, your inadvertent usage of Bradshaw provided me with a good laugh during my pregame, which helped ease the nervousness prior to tip. Thanks for a mini vacation from life. Okay, I'm going to tell you what happened, and this ties in to another thing that I wanted to talk about. So what happened was there was just a lot going on before the Virginia Tech game. And our friend Amanda Walkey was down there and wanted to say hello. Amanda, you may remember, was the young lady who provided us with the tickets for the Davidson game that we then gave away to whoever could tell us a great story. And we could have given a million tickets away for that because so many people did have terrific stories. But so Amanda was there, and the security guard had said, hey, Jones, this young lady would like to speak to you. And so I was trying to talk to her, but then we had to go back on the air. And so then I was texting Adam and going, hey, can you come talk to Amanda while we finish up this segment on the air? And then I'll come over there too. Plus, we had another thing going on that nobody cares about, but something else that we were trying to deal with network-wise at that point. So I was just I was at a lot of balls in the air, Adam. I was juggling a lot of – I was like Red Panda at this point. So I was trying to, like, text, thinking about two things, and talk on the air at the same time. And I just said Bradshaw instead of Blackshear by total accident, because Bradshaw, I can confidently say, is a more common last name than Blackshear. And by the way, Kerry Blackshear had a terrific game. He pulled in, like, 17 rebounds in the game, which is a career high. Also a technical foul. So it was not, and again, I would tell you if it was, it was not a mental slip towards Sex and the City. So I hate to ruin the mini vacation from life, but I've never seen it. I honestly didn't know that was a character's name on the show. I bet Jeff's going right now, he's going, that's exactly what somebody who did have that happen would say.
Yeah.
But honestly, that was not it.
They don't look very similar, Kerry Blackshear and Sarah Jessica Parker.
No.
So I don't think that you saw Kerry Blackshear and were like, not only do they have similar names, but also they look similar.
Yeah, and similar rebounding ability.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't think that.
I don't know. That is one of those shows that people love that I have never seen 1 second of.
No, never seen it. Before we get to some more, a reminder that as Carolina celebrates its 225th birthday, UNC.edu is your source for everything happening at the nation's oldest public university. Take that, Georgia! Since 1793, Tar Heels have paved the way to a better world. Carolina is a leader in global higher education, known for its innovative teaching, research, and public service in North Carolina and beyond. See the impact Tar Heels make every day. Learn more about what's happening at UNC. Visit unc.edu. Adam had a massive How Can You Justify That? The other show is brought to you. By the way, if you listen to it, you notice I actually trimmed that up a little bit.
Yeah.
I helped you out a little bit.
I mean, some people see it as helping. Some people see it as hurting.
One part I did have to take out because we had one of the machine. So it just I had to take it out. But then there's another part where I was just like, Adam has used strong language that I think he was just a little bit heated. I don't think he really wants him to say this. Circle K, though, always wants you to stop by because they are providing customers what they need when they need it and servicing customers in clean stores, offering all kinds of products like ice cold Coca-Cola. Side note, when we're done recording, I have got an ice cold Coke Zero Calories just waiting for me. Just waiting for me, Adam. I can't wait.
How are you keeping it ice cold during the time that we're recording?
It's a little vacation from life, Adam. I'm looking forward to that. We mentioned Top of the Hill. Of course, they sponsor Adam's List as well. Okay, another email that I wanted to get to. This was a question that we received, Adam, and it's been a popular one here recently, and I understand why. Doug Paletta sent this one in. Wanted to know about Sterling Manley and how Sterling is doing. He has missed, I believe it's 6 consecutive games now for the Tar Heels. And as tends to happen when there's kind of a lack of information about something, I think there's been a lot of kind of speculation about what's going on with Sterling. I think it just comes down to this. It's hurting. His knee is hurting when he tries to play basketball right now. And so the Tar Heels are not going to put him back out there. He's not even going to practice until that pain goes away. There is no, at least that I'm aware of or believe to be true, any kind of nefarious something going on or some secondary reason. It's just quite simply his knee's just not feeling great. It hurts when he plays, and right now the best thing to do is just rest it. And so while I think it is bad news for Sterling in that he has now missed a fair amount of time, it's hard to kind of get back into it if he is available to do that at some point this year, which you hope he is. But you got to get him healthy. There's no sense in making something worse just to try to push through it and be tough. You got to, if it's been bothering you that long to the point that it's gotten to this point, then you need to rest it and make sure it's as good as it can be.
I had the chance to talk to Sterling after a recent home game, not in like an interview format, but in just kind of a chatting format. So,
and we love Sterling.
Yeah.
I mean, multiple time podcast, great guy, as you guys know.
Right. Well, and so because it wasn't like an interview format, I don't want to repeat exactly what he said, but I think it's fair to say it had been bothering him prior to when he when he first set out. When he had been playing, it had been hurting. And so it eventually got to the point that he just couldn't play with that amount of pain anymore. And so now he's trying to get that cleared up so that he can play again. But it's not like he just woke up one morning and was like, oh, my knee hurts. It was something, and I think sometimes that's something that we all could do better to remember, is that if we haven't heard about it, we assume everyone feels 100%, when the reality is, over the course of the season, everyone hurts at some point or another, and whether they play with it or not, we don't know. Well, we know if they don't play, but if they do play and they're hurt, we just don't know. Like, I remember Jawad Williams one time was playing with, like, a very painful foot injury and just never spoke about it, and in fact got mad when you asked him about it because he didn't want anyone to know. So got mad in a very respectful way, of course.
Jawad in the house. Congratulations to Jawad. Just had twin girls.
Zoe and Zane, I think. That's right. But, yeah, he was able to come back from Japan for a week, so that was cool by his team to let him come back. But then, of course, they want him right back in Japan because he's a big part of that team. But so don't assume that everyone you see out there is 100% healthy and feels great. Odds are the vast majority of them have some sort of bangs or bruises that they're not talking about.
Okay. Adam, I have three more things I want to get to. I have two story times because they're both a little bit shorter.
Double header.
Yes, I want to go double story time. And then we have a pod apology. Which would you like to do first, the pod apology or the double story time?
I think we should do the podpology first.
The podology. Podpology.
It just rolls off the tongue.
Podpology. Okay. Adam and I need to send out a big podpology to Beth Thomas. Beth lives in Chicago. Beth, before Carolina went to play in Chicago, sent us this super nice email about how much she loves the pod. And through a Hail Mary, was like, hey, if you guys are here and want to go out to dinner, we'd love to do it. Like, my family, like, we all love you. And we, at least, I didn't respond. I don't think you responded.
No, I didn't.
And we didn't talk. Yeah, and we didn't talk about it on the air because it was just a crazy time. Like, it was the holidays. That trip is always a little wild, the one for that CBS Sports Classic. And so there was just a lot going on. Adam and I actually talked about it off the air that we had received this and said, well, okay, we got to respond back to her, and then neither one of us did it. So we, like current day Red Panda, dropped the bowl on this.
Yes.
So I just want to read a couple of things from Beth. She said, greetings from the suburbs of the Windy City. And she says she's a Salisbury native, Carolina class of 96, married to a Chicago boy currently in the suburbs north of the city. Talks about celebrating on Franklin Street after Chris Webber called a timeout. She was there in Houston in the Final Four. She was there at Phoenix in the Final Four in 16 and then 17. And so obviously a huge Tar Heel fan. Says that her family and I, huge pod fans as well, listen in the car on the way to and from school and other activities. Our four-year-old particularly likes the theme song for How Can You Justify That? Thank you. I'm glad somebody likes the How Can You Justify That theme. I bet your four-year-old doesn't think it's too long, does he?
Are you going to play it for him right now?
Yes, we're going to play it right now. I do not have to justify!
How can you justify what you've done?
can you possibly justify that?
That could be justified, Thomas Child. Thank you. Really loves the backpack song from Dora. Owe you a huge debt of gratitude for introducing him to that. I'd kind of forgotten that we did that, but good. Sorry, out there changing lives. So anyway, she says, although we don't have a drover in Chicago, she talked about how all the delicious food and had mentioned that they'd love to give us a delicious culinary experience in Chicago when we were there. So we apologize. She even says she wanted an arms cross photo, and we were in a terrible spot to be able to do arms cross photos at the United Center in Chicago. So Beth, this is our pod apology to you. You were super nice, reached out to us, and we forgot to respond. That's totally on us.
And our podmas is that when the Tar Heels go back to Chicago, which hopefully they will fairly often because I like going to Chicago.
Yeah.
Next time, the arms cross photo is going to happen. Even if the CBS Sports Classic puts us in the last row of the upper deck, you can't hold us down, CBS Sports Classic.
No.
We will talk to the people.
Okay, I actually have two more things in addition to the double story time that I just thought about that I wanted to do.
Okay.
One, I
remembered one thing, too, that we need to talk about.
One was the drover was mentioned in that email that Beth said. I need to revisit a text I received, Adam.
Mm. Wow.
From friend of the pod, Brian Burstiker.
Oh.
Stick, of course, former Tar Heel basketball player, now works in the Rams Club. Out of nowhere, Stick sent me this text. This past weekend, drover damaged by fire.
What?
In December, plans to reopen by April. So you can imagine my shock when I received this text. He sent me like a link to the news story.
Sure.
That's what it said. And so,
was it written by Tom Shaddle?
Probably. Yeah, Tom Shaddle's got his finger on the pulse of Omaha. Yeah. Adam, come on. So this is where Stick really did a great job and put on his journalistic hat, because I responded like, oh my goodness, or whatever. And he said, no worries. Here's my text conversation with Justin, the bartender from Drover, to get an update. Sent me a screenshot of the conversation. Stick said, just saw a post that the restaurant had a fire over the holidays. Are you okay? Justin responded, yes, small electrical fire and ventilation shaft above grill, but should be back in business in 6 to 7 weeks. Stick responded, glad that all seems to be okay. Hopefully big plans to come see you again in June, obviously referencing that the Diamond Heels hopefully make a trip to the College World Series again. I said, that's some big-time research. He said, catching up on the pod, heard a reference to the drover, knew you'd want to know.
That's so fortunate that no one was in the ventilation shaft with no pants on.
Yeah, that's right. You never know. That could happen.
There could have been a lot bigger problems than just what did occur, which sounds like a big problem.
Yeah.
Well, I wish I had known, because friend of the pod, John Lyon, was just in Omaha, and I told him he should go to the drover. Little did I know they weren't open.
No, be denied at the door.
I told him that was the one thing he had to do in Omaha.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, John Lyon.
That and go to where the old stadium used to be.
I debated telling him that, but
it wouldn't mean as much.
He had never been to the old one. I feel like it's not as cool if you haven't like actually been to the Jewel on the Hill.
Yeah, Rosenblatt and memories aren't as strong.
Yeah, if you hadn't eaten a triple Kong with Joe Bray in the parking lot at 2 a.m., I don't know if it touches your soul as much.
All right, going to get to the double story time, but I'm guessing what you remembered is also something I remembered, and that is that you and I had the opportunity on Tuesday night of this week to go to the Carolina Club and be a part of a GAA lecture series hosted by a friend of the pod, former pod guest, in fact, recurring pod guest. We've had him on twice, at least a full interview once and then a short interview a second time, Freddie Kiger. And the lecture was all about Woody Durham and about Woody's life and his career. And so I had to miss the first half of the evening because I was at Roy Williams Live.
A lot of people called that the good half.
So Adam was a part of that first half of the evening. So I'm going to let you talk about that, Adam. And then I was a part of the second half of the evening. But just overall, a really nice event. I mean, obviously, an emotional event because Woody's no longer with us. And so, you know, those memories were there. Those emotions were there. But it was also
I think, kind of partially learning some things about Woody, particularly from the personal side of things, kind of celebrating everything that he meant to Carolina fans, and just having a group of friends together and thinking about how they missed somebody who was important to them. And so I think overall, a really positive event, but an emotional – I say that with the caveat that there was certainly emotional parts to it.
I think it helped. If that same event had been held in April, I think people would have struggled.
Right.
But because there was a little space in there, I feel like that made it a little easier to have fun, I guess. First of all, again, hosted by Freddie Kiger. So you know right away.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
It's going to be good. And he's going to be well-prepared, and he's going to have good material. He had a lot of pictures that either you hadn't seen in a long time or you had not ever seen, mm-hmm. including a couple. We were sitting next to Gene, and even Gene said she had not seen a couple of them before. So that, I mean, you know. So in the first half, Freddie gave a little background on Woody's life, especially pre-UNC life. Jack Hilliard, who worked with Woody at WFMY in Greensboro for 10 or 14 years, a significant amount of time, spoke to kind of Woody's preparation when he was at WFMY and told some good stories about just things Woody did on camera that were kind of off the cuff but showed kind of that level of professionalism that we would later come to be so familiar with. I doubt have probably heard Gene speak much about Woody, but she did, and she was great. And it reminded me so much of that very first Reese Holbrook Golf Classic where there was an auction, and Woody got up there and said, "Now, I just want all you to know I'm no professional auctioneer. I mean, I've hardly ever even done this, and I really don't know what I'm doing." And then it was like something clicked over, and he was like one of those Eastern North Carolina tobacco auctioneers. "Hey, we got our first item of team signed basketball right here up front. We got $20, $30. Yep." And so we have always kind of joked about that since then, that like he kind of sandbagged it a little bit. Well, Gene gets up there, and she goes, "Oh, well, as you know, I'm not the speaker in my family. I'm just more of a referee." And like 10 minutes later, there wasn't a dry eye in the room.
That's awesome.
She absolutely killed it. And I don't even think she really had notes. Like, she had smaller than an index card with like three words on it and just crushed it. So she was great and kind of talking about their relationship. I enjoyed her talking about how Woody, she estimated, had written her about 2,000 letters during the 6 years that they were dating.
Wow.
And so she took them all home. She went to Meredith, as some people know, and Woody, of course, went to Carolina, so they were writing letters because they weren't texting or emailing. And so she took them all home before they got married and went through them all, and she saved three. She saved, one was the day before Woody graduated from Carolina. One was... I think the day after or day of that he asked her to marry him, and one was maybe the first one. And so she'd only saved three. And so I told her that I was thankful that she threw away those other 1,997, or we'd still be working on that Woody Durham book. It would not be done yet. So I thought that was really cool, and just hearing about their relationship and the length of time and kind of how that worked and how they worked together. She did a great job. And, of course, Freddie was great. And then you arrived.
Well, hold on. Then you spoke.
Oh, yeah, but people hear me speak on the pod all the time.
Well, I was just saying you were also a part of the event.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so I spoke a little about Woody, and everybody's heard me tell those stories. And so the only one I don't think I've told before on here is that I think it was around middle school. I had a pretty heated argument with one of my teachers about how to pronounce sophomore.
Oh.
And she, like, got out the big dictionary that you keep on in,
well,
like, the classroom.
Now you've got the pronunciation book. What's it say?
Well, I think we know it probably says sophomore. But I was intent that the correct way to say it was sophomore.
Right.
Because that's how Woody said it. And she tried to tell me that she had the dictionary. And I said, you know, I don't need that. I've got Woody.
Yeah.
So I kept going with sophomore. I don't need her telling me what to do. I'm my own man. I eat ramen noodles.
So it was it really was a pleasant event. Really nice evening.
So then you got there, and there were all these calls.
Yeah, so Freddie had asked me to pick out some calls. And he said, pick out Woody's greatest hits. Well, that's impossible because there's so many of them. But also, I think, and I've talked about this before, I think a lot of that is kind of almost very personal to people, where it really depends on what was going on in your life at that time and what kind of memory does that bring back for you. Like for me, the Rick Fox play, I've said it before, against Oklahoma in 1990 was a really fun one for me, but that may not mean anything to somebody else. The George Lynch dunk against Florida State, one that you and I both really like, that may mean very little to another Tar Heel fan. And so they're all these great plays, but I do think they are very individual as far as your level of importance that you give them. And then there's some that, I mean, like the 82 championship game. I think most Carolina fans have heard that call or know about it or know, at least have an idea what the circumstances were. Even younger Tar Heel fans, I think, know that Michael Jordan hit that shot. And so, you know, there's some of those that do supersede it. So I had pulled out all the championship calls, pulled out a couple of just early things, like the first time he ever mentioned the Tar Heel Sports Network, pulled out his final football call. And then what I tried to do was get some calls in there, some of them better known than others, but that I thought represented something that was important through Woody's career. And whether it was just a great example of something that I thought he did well, or there was one that kind of – I thought showed off the relationship that he and Mick had with each other on the air and kind of what made them so good together, or whatever. And so tried to kind of – and then some historical moments in Carolina history. So just tried to pick out a couple things that did that, and then talked around all those calls and told some stories and had a good time. And so then Freddie, after I was done, Freddie kind of wrapped up for about five more minutes telling the end of the story. And it was just, again, a very, very nice night. And if you're in the area and interested in that kind of stuff, Freddie Kiger does come athletic. He does a lot of GAA related things and a lot of lectures, but he frequently does athletic related ones as well, including did one on the 93 team last year in the spring. I think I told you I took my dad to that one and Eric was that. There's one coming up about the 2009 championship season. So
that's in February. So if you want to go, you should sign up pretty soon.
So there are that is something, again, if you're in this area, if you're interested in Carolina, he does a bunch of that kind of stuff. And Freddie's just a great speaker, and as you know. And so check it out if you're interested.
One of those calls reminded me of something that I had forgotten. The 2005 Duke game, the Marvin Williams shot.
Yeah.
If you listen back to the call, which I'm sure you can probably find, or maybe it's right here.
That one is no good. They battle for it. Loose ball. Recovered. Marvin, he scores. 17 seconds left. And he was fouled. Foul is on Patrick Johnson.
Woody says that the ball goes to Marvin, and he scores. And it's so unlike Woody to call him Marvin.
Yeah.
The reason that was, this was something Woody agonized about. I remember, I think he wrote about it in Tar Heel Monthly. Because that team had Jawad Williams, Marvin Williams, and Roy Williams,
yep.
He couldn't figure out how to – and Jawad and Marvin were on the court together a lot.
Yeah.
So you could have Williams passing it to Williams, and no one would have any idea what was going on. And so he decided to call at least Jawad and Marvin by their first names instead of by their last names for that season.
Yep.
And so that's why you hardly ever hear Woody refer to someone as first name only, because – he would not think that would be professional, even if it was for the Tar Heels. But that's why it's ball goes to Marvin instead of ball goes to Williams, because he had actually thought that whole thing out, and how can I make this better for the listener to understand who has the ball and who's doing what? Okay, I'm going to call them by their first name, even though my personal preference would be not to. I think that, of course, we all love that shot. I think that call is a cool way to kind of remember how seriously he took the whole thing.
Yeah, that's a good point. I did not. So now I wish I had said that last night or at the event. But you're right. I remember he had like a presentation at the beginning. I mean, like it was like, okay, everybody sit down and listen to what I'm going to tell you here. I'm going to do this during this year. And I not necessarily the way I'd handle it, but this is the way I remember that. Yeah, that he very clearly set it up and said, hey, this is how we're going to do this year. This is why we're doing this year. Yeah, that's interesting. That's a good point. Okay, Adam. Would you like a little story time?
I would. I'd like some goose honkers.
Kind of feel like this whole episode's been story time.
Yeah, it kind of has been.
But it's all right. That's good. Okay. I'm going to go double story time here. This one. Oh, so our two storytellers, Tyrese and Caroline. We're going to start with Tyrese's story. So get that goose honkers ready to go, because Tyrese's story starts like this. I was born a Heels fan from Rock Hill, South Carolina. That's Tyrese, not me. I've been to Rock Hill, South Carolina. And my story from the year of redemption begins like this. I, Tyrese, joined the military in 2008 after high school. And as a custom in the military, I wore my favorite school's colors like a badge of honor. I've taken a lot of heat from fans of rival schools and fans who hate the Tar Heels, but never have a reason why. In 2016, I was stationed in Augusta, Georgia, and a friend of mine who is a Kentucky fan went to watch the championship game at a Wild Wing Cafe, parentheses, not a sponsor of the pod. When Marcus Page hit the three to tie things up, I did an actual lap around the bar like I was running for president of said bar, giving random people high fives and hugs, some of which had no idea a game was even on and were just there for Masters Week. I kept telling my friend, it's over once UNC gets this into overtime, which let's honestly say, Tyrese, I think everybody was thinking the same thing. And I made it back to my seat just in time for the shot heard round the world, at least my small world. Unfortunately, I had to relive the shot for the next 12 months from friends sending me memes and GIFs of that shot. They held the ultimate Trump card in any argument because they knew it made my blood boil. Lucky for me, redemption was in the works. It was, Tyrese. The Luke May shot was already sweet enough for me because earlier in the season, Kentucky had beat my Heels during Tyrese's son's birthday party. That's a little rough, Kentucky. What the world? And my friend wouldn't stop talking about it. Then the Heels cut down the nets versus the Zags, and the balance was restored. And as a bonus, I got one of my favorite calls at the end of basketball season from my dad asking, when are we going to order our championship shirts? I enjoyed that story. And I'm going to guess, again, a little shorter, but I'm going to guess that Tyrese's story is not unique, Adam. I'm guessing we can say there have been tens of thousands of Tar Heel fans who probably experienced something very similar.
The longer we get from that, the more unbelievable it is that that whole thing happened that way.
Yeah.
That Carolina lost the championship game that way, that Marcus Page and Bryce Johnson, the two best players on the team, left because they had no more eligibility. And then the Tar Heels came back and won it the next year, including one of the greatest shots in Tar Heel basketball history. I think that will only get more unbelievable the longer we get away from it.
All right. Thank you, Tyrese. Now.
That was not from Tyrese Rice.
No. Tyrese Rice. I always liked Tyrese Rice. For some reason, I always liked him.
Except for that one time at the Conte Forum.
Yeah, where 36 in the first half.
And he was like fanning himself as he walked down the court.
Carolina won the game, so looking back on it, it's hilarious.
Right.
Okay. Story time number two. Fire that goose honkers back up, Adam. This is Caroline Cave's story, and it starts like this. Caroline says, I do not take Carolina basketball lightly, and I come from a legacy of those who do not do so either. Neither my mother nor my father ever attended UNC, and I grew up in Virginia. However, those two devout Tar Heel fans raised my sisters and me. Dean Smith was second only to the Pope in my childhood home, and that was during the regular season. By March, Dean Smith was another name for God. I was born in the mid-70s, and the first team in my memory was the 81-82 squad with Perkins, Jimmy Black, Doherty, Buzz, Jordan Worthy. My two older sisters nicknamed me Caroline James, who wins the games after Mr. Worthy, hence her Twitter handle. All three of the girls had Carolina blue turtlenecks that they would wear as a whole family gathered around the massive TV in the den to watch the boys play. There was no talking allowed during the game, only during the commercials, unless it was to scream at the ineptitude of the officiating. The story's not over. I just enjoy it so much.
Girls, get on your turtlenecks and start for the game.
Honey, did you wash the turtlenecks? No, girls, they're dirty. Just go get them anyway.
Well, and that's in the days when Carolina would play Saturday, Sunday, back-to-back a bit.
Cut to December 2011. So, Adam, you don't know this yet, but you play a big role in this story time. Hmm.
Caroline had had a tough year in 2011. She had had a job loss, a divorce, and her boys were one of the few things getting her through some tough days. In the bleak midwinter, I read one of Adam's wonderful post-game columns and felt moved to email him with some heartfelt words of fandom, thanking him for being awesome. Nice, Adam.
That's the only email like that I've ever gotten.
The rest of them are like, who are you? I really love your play-by-play. Geo called, great. Then one cold and wet afternoon, I returned home from work to discover Adam had sent me a copy of his book, Carolina Basketball, A Century of Excellence. Adam, let me just quickly pause to say, classy. Adam's gift made Caroline's day, her week, her month, and quite possibly redeemed that whole year for me. Nice, Adam. P.S. At the time, I was training a novice UNV training, a novice UNC fan. He's excused because his family was never sports-oriented. Entering his second season in 2011-12, he was an intense Tar Heel supporter, mostly because I informed him that if he truly wished to date me, he would either have to A, get on the Tar Heel train, come on, ride that train, or B, understand that he would be a basketball widower. My boys are more important than he is during the season. He is now a brilliantly frothing, rabid, maniac Tar Heel fan, Matt Stark. What up? And we've been together for 8 years. Needless to say, he got aboard the Tar Heel train. Adam, two really good story times from Tyrese and Caroline. Thank you both.
I can't imagine the look on Matt's face when Caroline said, all right, I'm going to teach you about the Tar Heels. Put on this turtleneck.
Yeah, put on turtleneck.
And we're going to watch the game.
We will start in 1977.
Michael Corrin was at the scorer's table.
Walter Davis played in that ACC championship game, Matt. President Reagan was shot that day.
They should have never played the game. They didn't have the Oscars. Do you know that?
We know that was 81. We were fast-forwarding. Okay. So thank you guys for those story times. And as always, you can fire a story time off to us, carolinainsiderpod@gmail.com, carolinainsiderpod@gmail.com. Adam, anything else before we go?
I tell you, for a quote-unquote bye week, this has been a chock full of news and notes pod.
We have another bye week pod, though, coming up. A pod with no game.
Right.
Coming up for our next one. We have a terrific guest scheduled. Not going to tell you who it is because we still haven't done it yet, but we have it on the schedule, and think you're gonna enjoy it, and we're going to get there early next week. But for now, hope you have a great weekend off. Enjoy watching other games and not having the stress of it being the Tar Heels. And we're going to let Nasir Little and also the RZA send us out here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
I'm Nasir Little. See you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all.
Box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.